Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for our daily magazine show, As It Is, and other programs designed for English learners.
Hello again from Washington. This is As It Is, a radio program and a podcast that helps you learn and improve your American English. We do this every day by bringing you interesting stories from around the world. We always speak a little slower than normal, and we use words that are easier to understand. That is a big help if English is not your first language. Today we have two stories for you. The first one is about the ongoing dispute about who owns what in the South China Sea. Then we will talk politics. Does the sound of a candidate's voice change the chances he or she has for being elected? A new study says some very interesting things. So if you are ready, let's get started with part one. The Association of Southeast Asian Nations is getting mixed reaction for its recent declaration on the South China Sea issue. The 10 ASEAN members struggled to reach a compromise statement at the end of meetings in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. Their final communique called for developing a required code of conduct in the disputed waters. ASEAN has been talking about setting up such a system for more than 10 years. Katie Weaver reports.
The Association of Southeast Asian Nations is getting mixed reaction for its recent declaration on the South China Sea issue. The 10 ASEAN members struggled to reach a compromise statement last week at the end of meetings in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. Their final communique called for developing a required code of conduct in the disputed waters. ASEAN has been talking about establishing such a system for more than 10 years. Benjamin Ho is a research fellow at the Institute of Defense and Strategic Studies in Singapore. He says there has been a lot of talk about the code of conduct. He says some Asian countries are in a hurry to have a system enacted. Mr. Ho thinks the possibility is very real for establishing rules of behavior. But, in his words, those rules should not be seen as a be-all and end-all for resolving the situation in the South China Sea. Many in East Asia believe any public statement is better than none at all. No communique was released at the ASEAN meetings in 2012, when Cambodia was the group's chair. O.A. Sun is a former political secretary to Malaysia's prime minister.
ASEAN tried very gingerly to strike a balance between the competing demands of the United States and of China, and the results being the language in the final joint communique.
U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry attended the Kuala Lumpur summit in a trip that also took him to Singapore and Vietnam. He warned that the United States will not permit any restrictions on shipping in the disputed sea. The Chinese government has long said that the territorial disputes in the South China Sea should be settled between claimants. But recently, China has been partly softening its position in communications with the Association of Southeast Asian Nations. 4 ASEAN members have competing claims in the waters with China. The 4 are Brunei, Malaysia, the Philippines, and Vietnam. In addition, China's territorial claims conflict with exclusive economic zones of 2 other ASEAN members, Indonesia, and Singapore. Leaders of ASEAN nations will meet in December. I'm Katie Weaver.
You are listening to VOA, the Voice of America. We come to you every day from Washington. Can the pitch, high or low sound, of a politician's voice increase the chances of getting elected to office? Two new studies suggest that candidates with lower-pitched voices may have an edge. Ana Mateo brings us that story.
Experience and money for campaigning increase a politician's chances of winning an election, but so may the sound of a candidate's voice. Not only what a candidate says, but how it sounds when he or she says something. Two recent studies examined the effect of voice pitch, its highness or lowness. The studies suggest that candidates with lower voices have better chances when it comes to seeking political office. Take the 2008 presidential election, for example, between then-Senator Barack Obama and Senator John McCain. Mr. McCain is a war hero. He had served in the U.S. Senate for more than 20 years when he ran against Mr. Obama for president. At that point, Mr. Obama had represented the state of Illinois in Congress for less than 4 years. In this presidential debate, they offered their vision of the future. First, Senator McCain.
I have the ability and the knowledge and the background to make the right judgments to keep this country safe and secure. These are major challenges to the United States of America. I don't think I need any on-the-job training.
Now, Senator Obama.
We are going to invest in issues like education. We are going to invest in issues that relate to how ordinary people are able to live out their dreams. And that is something that I'm going to be committed to as President of the United States.
Mr. Obama, the less experienced, went on to become president. One reason may have to do with the pitch of his voice, says Casey Klofsted. He teaches political science at the University of Miami in Florida. Professor Klofsted is not saying that Mr. Obama won only because he has a lower voice than McCain's. But in a study published in the journal PLOS ONE, he and other researchers suggest that voice pitch might have been an unconscious factor. The team asked 800 volunteers to listen to voices of non-politicians. The voices were changed by computer to sound higher or lower. The volunteers reportedly preferred the deeper pitch. They linked it with strength, competence, and honesty. Casey Klofsted also noted that the volunteers, in general, preferred candidates around 40 to 50 years old. At that point, he says, people's voices are at their deepest.
We are, like other animals, influenced by very subtle cues, nonverbal audio cues. That are biologically determined. And what we're trying to do in this research is to show that these subtle influences do have an impact on our decision-making and how we select our leaders.
Earlier work by Professor Klofsted and his co-researchers found that candidates with deeper voices earned more votes. In the latest study, none of the voices belonged to candidates. If you had to choose a person to vote for based on their voice, which one would you choose?
I urge you to vote for me this November. I urge you to vote for me this November.
If unconscious bias toward voice pitch is a factor in an election, some candidates might want to consider voice coaching to lower their tone. I'm Ana Mateo.
It is VOA that you are listening to. We come to you from Washington.
Coming up, more programs designed for English learners. You can read and listen to our reports and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Economics Report. A financial deal let Greece make an important debt payment this week, and with the payment in place, Greek Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras resigned, calling for new elections on September 20th. Also, the International Monetary Fund delayed a decision on China's currency, the yuan. Officials of the European Stability Mechanism on Wednesday officially approved the release of $95 billion to Greece. The European Union agency oversees financial help for EU countries. The money will help Greece pay debts to international lenders and support its economy. On Thursday, Greece used money from the European financial bailout to repay $3.5 billion to the European Central Bank. Earlier, German lawmakers voted to approve the $95 billion bailout package. Germany is the largest single contributor to Greece's economic bailout. The country's approval of the deal was needed before it could proceed. Chancellor Angela Merkel's financial minister told lawmakers it would be irresponsible not to approve the bailout. He said the package should be approved for the good of Greece and the European Union. Finance ministers from the countries using the euro approved the first $29 billion payment of the bailout deal on Friday. European countries moved to approve additional money after the Greek Parliament approved the deal earlier that day. The deal permits Greece to continue to be among the 19 countries using the euro. And the International Monetary Fund says it will delay a decision about China's money. The international lender said it would wait a year before deciding if China's money, the yuan, will be used in its group or basket of reserve currencies. Reserve currencies are held by central banks to pay off international debt obligations or influence exchange rates. Reserve currencies include the U.S. dollar, the Japanese yen, the euro, and the British pound. IMF reserve currencies are supposed to be freely usable and widely traded internationally. However, China strictly controls its currency exchange rate and the flow of currency in and out of the country. China recently changed the way it sets the value of its money. Chinese officials said the move was meant to make the currency exchange rate more market-oriented. Soon after, the value of the yuan quickly fell more than 3% in 2 days last week. And that's the VOA Learning English Economics Report. Find more stories about economics on our website, learningenglish.voanews.com. I'm Mario Ritter.
From VOA Learning English, welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in Special English. I'm Steve Ember. This week in our series, we continue the story of the United States Constitution. In May of 1787, a group of America's early leaders met in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, to amend the Articles of Confederation. That document had established a loose union of the 13 states with a weak central government. But instead of amending the Articles, the delegates at the convention wrote a completely new constitution. As we heard last time, one of the issues they discussed was slavery. The existence of slavery affected decisions like how to count the national population. It also affected the powers proposed for Congress. The delegates at the convention accepted several political compromises on the issue of slavery. One compromise was the three-fifths rule. The population would be counted every 10 years to decide how many members each state would have in the House of Representatives in Congress. With the three-fifths rule, the delegates agreed that every five slaves would be counted as three people. Another compromise would allow states to import slaves until the year 1808. After that, no new slaves would be brought into the country. Many of the delegates in Philadelphia did not like these compromises, but they knew the compromises would keep the southern states, where slavery was most widespread, from leaving the convention. After all the debates, bitter arguments, and compromises, the delegates were nearing the end of their work. 4 months had passed since the convention began. The weather had been hot. Emotions had been hot too, but that was expected. After all, the men in Philadelphia, and the delegates were all men, were deciding the future of their country. Early in September, the convention appointed five delegates to a committee of style. It was their job to write the document containing all the decisions made at the convention. The chairman of the committee was William Samuel Johnson of Connecticut. The other members were Alexander Hamilton of New York, Governor Morris of Pennsylvania, Rufus King of Massachusetts, and James Madison of Virginia. Of these five men, Governor Morris was known for the beauty of his language. So Johnson asked him to write the Constitution. Here in Washington, visitors to the National Archives can read an original copy of the United States Constitution. Leanne Potter at the National Archives says visitors are often surprised that the document is only 4 pages long.
The irony is that the pages are actually nearly 3 feet long and about 2 feet wide. They're written on parchment. In other words, they're written on animal skin using an iron gall ink. And this particular document was created in September of 1787.
The convention approved 23 articles for the Constitution. Governor Morris rewrote them in simpler form, so there were just 7. Leanne Potter at the National Archives describes the structure of the Constitution.
The document itself is divided by article, and each article focuses on a different aspect of the American government.
Article 1 describes the powers of the Congress. It explains how to count the population for purposes of representation. And it states who can become senators or representatives,
and how long they can serve. Article 2 describes the powers of the president. It explains the requirements for the office and how the president is to be elected. Article 3 describes the powers of the federal judiciary, which includes the Supreme Court and all of the district and circuit courts. Leanne Potter at the National Archives explains.
That part of our government makes sure that the laws that the legislative branch creates and are being enforced by the executive branch are in fact constitutional. In other words, that the laws they create are legal themselves.
The first three articles provide a system of checks and balances. The purpose is to prevent any of the three branches of government, legislative, executive, or judicial, from becoming too powerful. Article 4 explains the rights and duties of the states under the new central government. Article 5 provides a system for amending the Constitution. Article 6 declares the Constitution to be the highest law of the land. And Article 7 simply says the Constitution will be established when 9 states approve it. The members of the convention wrote a preamble for the Constitution. It began, "We, the undersigned delegates of the states of New Hampshire, Massachusetts, and so on," it listed all 13 states by name. The Committee of Style did not think it was a good idea to list each state. After all, Rhode Island never sent a delegate to Philadelphia. And no one knew for sure if every state would approve the Constitution. So Gouverneur Morris wrote instead, "We, the people of the United States of America." Those simple words solved the problem. But they caused angry debate during the fight to approve the Constitution. They made clear that the power of the central government came not from the states, but directly from the citizens of the nation. Modern-day Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas came from a family descended from slaves. He grew up in the southern state of Georgia. Justice Thomas recalled having to memorize the opening statement to the Constitution when he was a child.
I always think it's so fascinating to think of these black kids in the segregated school in Savannah reciting the preamble to the Constitution of the United States. What do we believe? I mean, everything so obviously in front of you is wrong. You can't go to the public library. You can't live in certain neighborhoods. You can't go to certain schools. But despite all of that, you lived in an environment of people who said it was still our birthright to be included.
The rest of the preamble states why the Constitution was written. In order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. The next step was to sign the document. On September 17th, the delegates gathered for the last time. One might think all of their business finally was done. But Nathaniel Gorham of Massachusetts rose to speak. "If it was not too late," he said, "he would like to make a change. Instead of electing one representative for every 40,000 people, as agreed, he suggested changing the number to 30,000. Gorham's proposal could have caused a bitter argument. Then, suddenly, George Washington, the president of the convention, stood up. The delegates were surprised. He had said little all summer. Now George Washington rose to express his support for the proposed change. He said it would guarantee a greater voice in the government for the people of the nation. Every delegate agreed to the change, which would mean a larger number of representatives in Congress. Finally, it was time to sign the Constitution. It was also the last chance to speak against it. Many delegates stated their objections to different parts of the document. In the end, most of the delegates declared that for the good of the nation, they would sign it. Several, however, refused to put their name on the Constitution. Edmund Randolph of Virginia and Elbridge Gerry of Massachusetts said they could not sign the document. They believed it would not be approved by the states. And that, Gerry said, would lead to civil war. George Mason of Virginia also refused to sign. He had several reasons, but his first objection was that the document did not guarantee enough liberties. There is no declaration of any kind for preserving the liberty of the press, or the trial by jury in civil causes, nor against the danger of standing armies in time of peace. Mason wanted to add a Declaration of Rights. Randolph, Gerry, and Mason were the only delegates present in Philadelphia who did not sign the Constitution. Four other delegates who opposed it went home before the signing. So did nine delegates who supported the Constitution but went home early. Few of the delegates in Philadelphia could feel sure that enough states would approve the Constitution to make it the law of the land. As several of them said later, they wrote it the best they could. Without it, the young nation would break apart before it even had a chance to succeed. If future generations did not like the Constitution, it offered ways for them to change it. Here is George Washington, played by an actor.
I'm a practical man. I hope for the best, but I plan for the worst. And that's what this document does.
Yet the struggle to create the Constitution had just begun. Writing it took 4 months. Ratifying it took more than twice as long. The process of getting the new Constitution approved will be our story next week. I'm Steve Ember, inviting you to join us each week at VOA Learning English for The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English.
Washington, this is VOA.